Good morning and welcome to episode 218 of Taking a Charge podcast with you from Regensburg, Germany. David Hein of Hein News. Thanks for stopping by. I realized last week with the podcast that I forgot to mention the number of the podcast. It was kind of a last minute thing with Oz last week. But I'm sure that was okay for most of you. But in case you were wondering, last week was obviously 217, this week 218. If you want to get in contact with the show, best way is on Twitter at Hein News, HEINNEWS. There's the website, heinnews.com. The email address is heinnews@gmx.de. The Facebook group is Taking the Charge Podcast. Just put that in the search and you will find the Taking the Charge Podcast. And you can come over and hang out in the group. Also, you can go to iTunes, rate and review the show. And if you want to support the show, go to patreon.com / taking the charge, and you can make a donation, a pledge to the show. Show us the love and keep the show going. Last week, actually, I was going to run the interview that I'm going to run today last week, but like I said, last week it was kind of a last-second decision to do it with Oz, just because it was pretty fresh and everything else. So this week I have a interview with a young German national team player, 23-year-old Maodo Low, who's his rookie year this year. Playing with Brose Bamberg, and has shown flashes of what he's able to do. Has had three games where he's scored in double digits in the BBL against Göttingen. He had 19, career high 19 with 7 assists as well. Had 16 in a big game against Bayern Munich. And then last week, or this past weekend, he scored 10 points against Gießen. Has had 7 games with at least 14 minutes already for Bamberg. Definitely becoming more of a rotation player in the BBL at least. EuroLeague, he's hasn't been able to, really do that much. I saw him last night against Zvezda in the EuroLeague game, and missed both of his shots. One of them was a layup, and did drive to the basket and got a shot blocked. But showed that there is a good motor to get to the rim. I think that if he keeps working in practice and against the guys, like Zizis and Strelniks and Kosua, that he will make the next step forward. He's already gotten in 7 EuroLeague games. He's getting there. 23, turned 24 December 31st. Finished year 24-year-old. And like I said, so it's his rookie year, getting there. So I had a chance to talk to him. This is actually a little bit ago. Did a piece on him for FIBA Eurobasket site. Talking about sort of the next generation, whatnot. So you can take a look at that. But in general, here's my interview with him, and we'll talk to you after that.
Maodo, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I guess first of all, you had a couple weeks delay in your debut in the Easy Credit BBL in the German league. You got in their first game against Walter Tigers Tübingen. Maybe go back and reflect on your first your first couple of games now as a professional basketball player?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was a quick turnaround from the summer that I've had, just the last summer. And, you know, because of the national team, I joined the team late, and along with Patrick Heckmann and Daniel Theiss, who also played for the German national team. So I wasn't able to, you know, prepare with the team in preseason, and really just had to learn everything on the fly, basically. And prior to that first game, I probably had one real practice with the team, also because I had a foot injury, just a slight tweak in my ankle, which also did not allow me to practice after I joined the team, after national team. So it was a really quick turnaround, really, and but it was exciting, and I was glad to play that first game and in front of the home crowd in Bamberg, which was a really great atmosphere. And I was pretty nervous the first half, to be very honest, in that first game. But you know, it was fun to play with the team and to get to know the guys. And I'm still in the process of really, you know, integrating myself into the team and getting to know, you know, the way things are done here. And it's a really exciting process.
You know, obviously you were one of the best shooters in the history of Columbia University. I saw in the game against Göttingen, you hit 5 threes. Were able to pick up 7 assists. You know, obviously with the games against, let's call them the lower opponents, I know you guys don't consider them that at all, but, you know, that's games where, you know, they want to try to rest some of the veteran, you know, the veteran guys. You know, you played 19 and 14 minutes, and then against Göttingen, you were able to play just under 30 minutes and score the 19 points with the 7 assists. Maybe just talk about how much of a joy that was for you to really go out there and show your stuff.
I mean, as you said, you know, we have a really tough schedule, so with this team, it's a very team oriented, you know, program, and you know, everyone is able to step up, I think, in this team, and everyone is willing to, you know, to share the responsibility, you know, sharing it across different nights. And it's tough when you have, you know, so many games, and then you know, you every game is a challenge because simply because of the schedule that we have. So it was, you know, it was great to play that game and to be able to have some success and be able to help the team in some sort of regard. So that was a good experience, definitely. But you know, it's still a time in which I'm still finding, you know, like my comfort level in the team and starting to integrate myself into the team and try to give the team whatever I can give to the team in order to have a successful season and in order to win games. So that's the main goal. You know, I just want to have team success and somehow contribute to that.
You knew of the game. You know, you played national team. We'll come back to the national team as well. But, I mean, you knew the FIBA game, obviously. Maybe just your thoughts about how different of a game it is to what you played at college. You know, how ready you think you were, maybe also the help of the national team, but how ready you were to step in and maybe even more, how much different, how much better is the game that you even thought it was going to be?
I mean, it really is a lot different than college basketball. Just because it's a whole different game, you know, the shot clock is shorter, the 24-second shot clock, and it's much more, you know, pick and roll and team oriented in regards to you have to read what the other team is giving you on the pick and rolls, for example, and you have to make the right decisions. Whereas in college, it's like we play the Princeton offense, and you know, we just pass the ball around for 35 to 30 seconds until the team got tired, the opposing team, and then we had an open shot. You know, it was much simpler basketball. And here in Europe, it's way more complex, and you actually have to make reads, you know, especially as a point guard. And that's probably the main adjustment.
Later, just a couple days ago, you had your debut in the EuroLeague with Bamberg's first game down in... in at Fenerbahce, which is obviously a tough place to play. You didn't play a lot, but you were able to get out there for a couple of minutes. Thoughts about getting on a court in the EuroLeague, which is obviously really the one step below the NBA.
Yeah, no, that was a great experience as well. That again, EuroLeague is again another level. You know, as you said, probably the second best after the NBA. And just what I spoke about, you know, the level of complexity in basketball, it really shows in the EuroLeague. And the players are extremely smart, experienced, and when I stepped on the court, I could definitely feel it. You know, you really have to focus 100%. And I was glad, you know, to get on the court, and I'm very motivated to get to that level and to be able to feel comfortable at that level at some point, and really start playing basketball on that type of level.
We'll come back to Bamberg then in a little bit. Let's go to this past summer, the German national team. You know, you guys started off pretty well with the two victories against Denmark and then Austria, and then kind of had the two defeats. And you know, there are people doubting whatever, and you guys really came through with two pretty convincing victories at home in Bamberg against Austria, and then you went to the Netherlands and really beat them pretty good. Maybe just talk a little bit about how that whole campaign, you know, starting well and then kind of going, you know, through that little slump. You know, you had the multiple overtime game with the Danes, and then a couple of days to reflect on it, and then going and getting the two victories.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's basketball. We were a young team, and at some point throughout the tournament, we didn't play hard enough to win those games. And at the end of the day, you know, it was a tournament scenario that we were in, and everyone, you know, you look at the opposing team, and the hovering atmosphere is like, oh, you know, every game is a must, like is a given win. But you know, in basketball, you can never say that. On any given day, any team can beat any team, and I think we refocused, and once we realized we had the backs against the wall and really needed to buckle down and get the win against Austria and the Netherlands, then you know, we were able to do that. But I think we didn't play hard enough at some points of the tournament, which really gave us that slump. And the main message is you can never underestimate any team, because you know, basketball really is a game in which anything can happen any given day. And I'm proud of the way that we were able to do that, and we were able to show character and really bounce back from that slump that we had. And we had a great summer. We had a tough summer, but you know, I think we all learned from that, and we had an experience which will give us young players, and we were predominantly young players, will give us a good good experience for the future.
You were able to play a major role as you know, one of the top point guards. You mentioned that the game is very pick and roll orientated. How much of a comfort level did you have playing the pick and roll then at that international level then?
I mean I always played point guard growing up, and I am a point guard, but you know, since at college, like I said, at Columbia, we kind of ran a Princeton offense, which those were basically crucial times of my development as a player. And I really did develop at Columbia, but due to the nature of the offense that we played, that was a part of my game which I wasn't really exposed to very much. I wasn't really confronted with pick and roll situations much at Columbia, you know. So I believe, you know, I have the speed and some of the characteristics of a point guard, and the quickness, the speed, and the ball handling, but just the comfort level with making the reads was just something I still have to get used to, and something that I definitely have to work on. It's just a matter of practice and experience, and the more and more that, you know, you get exposed to that type of situation, the more comfortable you get with it. But, it's basketball, you know, there's always something you have to work on, and that's the beauty of the sport as well. It's such a cohesive game in which so many different things matter, and you can always improve in some sort of aspect. And that's really something that keeps me going. You know, it's always good to know there's something you can improve on, and you work hard on it, and you improve on it, and that's really a very fulfilling feeling, I think.
Mission accomplished. You guys are qualified for EuroBasket 2017. How excited are you come next summer, you guys are going to be in the tournament?
Yeah, we're excited. You know, that was the expectation going into the summer, and we made it happen. You know, it was a tough one, like I said, but you know, we dug down and we were able to make that goal happen, and we're excited for that. You know, we're excited for the upcoming tournament and for, you know, some players like Dennis Schroeder to come back into the team and you know, contribute to the core group of guys that we have had last summer, and really, you know, tackle this thing and hopefully have a good, successful tournament.
Last summer, obviously, you had the experience of playing with Dirk at EuroBasket in Berlin, maybe, you know, playing at home in front of your home crowd. You know, I'm sure you had a few friends, family in the arena, playing with Dirk, just being around everything that he represents and everything he does. Maybe just the biggest memories you have of last summer.
Yeah, I would say the tournament itself in Berlin. Like you said, when I played in front of my home crowd, basically my home city. I love Berlin, and I grew up in Berlin, and that's my home. So that was a great feeling to be able to play there, you know, in front of my family, and then such a big stage, you know, the European Championships, and that was a great experience for me, you know, and I will never forget that time, to be very honest.
And what was it like? What was it like just playing with and being around Dirk?
Unbelievable experience. You know, it was crazy to see how humble and what a great guy he is, and not just on the court, but just off the court as well. You know, the way he carries himself, I think it's something that really a young player can learn from, and his professionalism, his approach to basketball. Despite all of his success, you know, it was unbelievable the way he prepared, and that was something as a young player, which really definitely can be a great lesson, you know. And he's one of the greatest players to ever play basketball, so it was an honor to just, you know, play him like in his team and share the same jersey.
For a long time here in Germany, people have been wondering, you know, what's going to happen after Dirk. You know, we're pretty much there now. You know, he's you know, I don't think he's going to be coming back next year. It hasn't been officially announced or anything like that. But say that this is the end of his career, his national team career, and you actually being part of the future, you know, with Dennis there, Tibor, Paul Zipser, and everybody else. How healthy do you think right now Germany is in the, let's call it, post-Dirk Nowitzki era?
I think we have a, like I said, a young core group of guys who are very talented. And, you know, as long as every summer, as long as everyone is dedicated to, you know, coming to the team and forming the chemistry and forming the trust amongst each other, I think that we will have a talented and a very young team, which can always be promising. So I think positively, and when everyone is coming, I think we have a good team that can really compete in Europe.
What kind of motivation did you take from being one of the last cuts on the 2014 team that was qualifying for EuroBasket 15? You know, Coach Matapšić had brought you in. A lot of people, you know, really didn't know you at all. And, you know, you were really close to making that team. And, you know, like I said, we're one of the last cuts. How much motivation did you take out of that? And, you know, going into this summer saying, you guys, you might not have heard of me last year, but I'm going to make sure you guys know me now.
I mean, that was, it gave me great confidence. The fact that I was, you know, part of the team for so long, especially since I was never really on the map or on the radar for the national team or any sort of team, even throughout my young years here in Germany. So that to me was, you know, a great summer. And that's when I really started gaining confidence. And really, you know, push myself to keep on going and to reach that level. So that was very motivating for me, definitely.
Does that say anything that, you know, I mean, we you know, you have the NBBL, you have the JBBL, and you have the NBBL. You know, a lot of these professional teams also have Pro B teams, Pro A teams. Does having someone like you, okay, I mean, it's a little different circumstance because you went to the States pretty early. But that someone like you, let's say, went through the cracks, I mean, does it say anything about German basketball and the way they find talent at all, or what do you think about that whole situation?
I think, you know, it happens. I don't think just only in Germany. I think generally lies, or in any country that can happen. There's always politics no matter where you go, and you know, some club teams are preferred than others, and also maybe, you know, some players develop at certain times of their path. So I don't know exactly what it was, but I do think that it happens, and you know, some players feel demotivated and don't really take the path that they could have gone if they were challenged and if they were acknowledged earlier, you know. But that never really was the case for me, because I always had faith in me. I always just loved playing basketball no matter what happened, and I always stuck to it. So I just kept playing, and then once I graduated from high school, you know, I realized I want to keep on playing. I want to get an education. So where's the best chance to make that happen? That was the U.S. So I went over to the United States, kept on playing basketball, and I improved, kept on sticking with it, and you know, and then finally, you know, at some point, they got some sort of acknowledgement. But I don't know exactly what really happened, but I think it happens. I'm not just one case. I think it definitely happens a bunch of times. But that's just life, you know. That's just the way it is, you know. you can't really blame anyone or anything. That's just the way it is sometimes. And, you just got to keep on going. If it really is your passion, then things will hopefully turn out your way.
And was the combination of education and basketball, was that the main reason you wanted to go to the States? Was it also a cultural thing? I mean, there's, you know, we'll come to your parents then in a couple of minutes, but, you know, was it, you know, going somewhere else and seeing something else? Was that a you know, also a big factor and you wanted to go over? You know, why did you decide to go over to the States then for that stage of your development?
Simply because of education. Yeah. I knew that I wanted to educate myself, and I knew if I was going to stay in Europe, I wasn't going to be able to study the way I can in the States. So that was the main decision for me. If it was just for basketball, I probably would have stayed in Germany, to be very honest. But at the same time, I must add, you know, I was always a player who, in Germany, I was, how do I say? I don't know if my game when I was younger really suited the German type of basketball. I was always playing a little differently. I was very fast, you know, I dribbled, I handled the ball. I used to like to cross over, and you know what I mean? Yeah. More of like a one-on-one oriented game is what I had when I was younger. So, like, I began to think, you know, maybe my game translates better to the American type of basketball, you know, where it's, you know, more athletic, more fast break oriented, a little bit more one-on-one oriented. So basketball wise, I thought, you know, I want to get an education, and I think maybe my game translates well to college, to the American way. So I'm going to just give it a try. And, you know, I didn't really, that's the thought process I had, and I took the leap, and it kind of worked out, and I really did develop myself at college, and really was able to flourish my game and even elaborate my game and make it better. So I think that was really the right decision for me.
Let's get off basketball for a second, just for a question maybe or two or whatever, but you know, going to a state school in Illinois, you know, I guess probably the closest thing to an Ivy League school in Illinois would probably be Northwestern. And you know, you think of Yale, Columbia, and every, you know, all the Ivy League schools, you think, man, that coursework's got to be real tough. You know, tell us about it. You know what I mean? is it as tough as you thought it was going to be? Did it kick you in the butt pretty good, or you know, what'd you think about the education there?
Education's unbelievable. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tough. It's not easy, Ivy League, especially as an athlete, because you have to do both academics and sports. And the first year was really tough. It was an adjustment. But, you know, once the first year, once you have that behind you, you started to get the hang of it. And you just started to realize that there are going to be nights when you have to do homework at 5:30 or 6 a.m. and then get up for early a.m. lift, you know. So that's just the way you had to do it in order to get by and in order to get both things done. And but once you got the hang of it, it really was fine. It's just the adjustment the first year, which was really tough.
And were you able to, at least at the beginning, probably not, but were you able to let's say, enjoy the city? I mean, you're in the Big Apple, New York City. Were you able to enjoy it that much early on? I mean, obviously getting used to the game, you're getting used to the studies and everything else. I mean, you had been in high school for a year, so that was already a little bit there. But, you know, were you able to enjoy New York City that much?
Yeah, definitely. New York City is the part of the reason why I also committed to going to Columbia. You know, I really made a conscious decision of going there and really making great use of being in New York City. And I think it also helped me to, you know, college, and it could get a lot because the academics was tough and basketball was tough. So, you know, it was good to have some sort of an escape and an outlet, you know, and just take the subway and go down to, you know, 42nd Street and just hang out and really get your mind off of things. So that was a big part of my college experience, you know, with New York City, definitely.
Obviously, your mother is a renowned painter and sculptor. I imagine, you know, her artworks are, you know, were presented in various museums around the world. How much did you guys travel? Were you able to go with her on different trips and stuff? How much did you travel when you were growing up with her?
I traveled a lot, you know, especially when my father was in Africa at times, and, you know, it was just my mom and I. So when she had an exhibition, you know, I had to travel with her because I couldn't be left alone. So I traveled a lot with her and, you know, seen many different cities around Europe, and it was something which really shaped my childhood to a great extent, and I really, really enjoyed those times, and it was very exciting.
Were there places that you really, looking back now, really enjoyed more than others?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Italy. My mom had a few projects and exhibitions there, in Venice and Florence, and I also remember the south of France was very beautiful, where my mom had a bunch of friends and projects as well. And just all around Europe, Seville and Spain. It was really great. I really enjoyed those times.
And how did you get into basketball? I saw an interview where she said, no, I never pushed her into anything, you know, either art or sports, athletics at all. And, you know, how did you kind of get into sports? I imagine being in Berlin, you know, soccer, football was the first thing. And then, you know, I mean, obviously Berlin do quite a bit as far as basketball with their different programs there. How did you get into sports, and at what age did you start basketball?
I played soccer when I was young, obviously, because of what everyone does being a child in Germany.
It's Germany.
And then I got to basketball through my brother. He basically played a video game, and it was a basketball video game, and I really enjoyed that video game. So I asked my mom if I could have a hoop in my room, a basketball hoop, and then I started playing from then on. And I joined the club team when I was officially joined the club team when I was like 10, yeah.
And was that Charlottenburg then, or who was that?
No, it was actually Big It Set, the first one.
Okay. Uh-huh.
But I did that only for like a month or something, and then I didn't really enjoy playing there. So then I stopped for 2 years, and then when I was 12, I really started playing, and that's when I started my career, and I haven't ended since.
And was there a moment there where you said, "Oh, I want to get back to it"? Was there, you know, were you watching the game on an NBA game, or did one of your friends, you know, hey, say, you know, why don't you come back to hoops, or Was there something that happened there?
No, I kept on playing, you know, just in my room, and it was just fun for me. I don't know, just playing. Every time I touched the basketball, it was just fun. I just enjoyed it. So.
And who were some of the guys you looked up to, role models or whatever, on the basketball court?
When I was younger?
Yeah.
Oh, I had a few. I had Allen Iverson. I really liked Tracy McGrady, Jamal Crawford. Yeah, that's probably the main three ones.
Most underrated thing about Ivy League hoops?
Most underrated thing? Well, I mean, just generally, the level of basketball, I think, is a little underrated. Definitely, it's a mid-major conference, and the teams that make the tournament, they always perform well, and that really says a lot, you know. So I think just generally, the notion is, you know, it's Ivy League, it's only academic, you know, these guys can't play, but there are some, you know, I think the top four Ivy League teams every year. There's very solid mid-major programs, and so I think just generally the level of basketball is underrated.
Yeah, Harvard's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, Harvard and Yale last year. Yeah. Princeton will be very strong next year. I wouldn't be surprised if Princeton does, you know, good stuff. Columbia, obviously, I'm a Columbia guy. I like Columbia, man. So I really wish the best for that team as well. And, you know, we have a good coach coming in with Coach Ingles, and he really was able to do good things at NJIT, and we have good talent at Columbia, so I hope he's going to – I really think positively, and I think they'll be able to do good stuff as well.
How disappointed are you that you were never able to play in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I was pretty disappointed in that, to be honest. I really thought the last year we were able to do it, but the season just didn't go as the way we thought it would, and it was a little tough, but I wish that I would have been able to achieve that.
Just because that's when anybody thinks college basketball, that's one of the first things they think about, right? The tournament and March Madness and everything.
Exactly.
Did you watch any of it? I mean, obviously, you know, New York hosts some things. You know, did you ever go watch any of it?
Yeah, like my junior sophomore years, I watched it with UConn because Nils Giffey, he gave me tickets, so I watched the games. Yeah. And they played in the garden, and that was cool.
Talk about the garden, man. Obviously, that's just this this iconic you know, facility for basketball. What was it like? Did you only watch that? Did you watch any Knicks games there? Did you take in anything else in there?
Yeah, watched Knicks games as well. You know, Dennis Schroeder, he always gave me tickets when he came to New York when they played Brooklyn or New York Knicks. So I always I watched them play the Hawks versus the Knicks and the Hawks versus Brooklyn. So yeah, it was great, man. New York is a great city, you know. I really like New York.
In the CIT, you guys bounced back and you actually won the CIT, one of the postseason tournament. You know, maybe just a couple words about that. But then also in the final, you guys beat UC Irvine, and obviously one of the guys on that team is the big 7'6" guy, Mamadou Njai. Just maybe a couple words about playing against a guy that big and what kind of difference maker is that playing against a guy like that?
It's definitely a difference maker. I struggled that game because, you know, he was standing in the paint, channeling everything into the basket, and the rest of the team was playing some sort of matchup zone. So they really focused on my shot, and I wasn't able to get any free looks that game, and I really struggled, man, but we were still able to get the win, and you know, at the end of the day, we got the win, and I was so happy, and it was a really cool time, and I felt great to be able to achieve that for the program of Columbia, you know, because that was a big success for the program, and they haven't won a postseason tournament, so that was great.
I went to the NCAA tournament for the first time, not last season, but the season before, and you know, I'm a veteran European international basketball reporter, so I know the 24 second clock, and then that season was the first time here in Europe or the world basically where after the offensive rebound, there was a 14-second reset. And going to the NCAA tournament, you know, I would sit there and be watching the game and then be thinking to myself, oh, there's got to be like, you know, like only 3-4 seconds left on the shot clock. And there was like 17, 18 seconds left to go. And then there was a reset back to 35. You were there in 14 and then even 15 as well. And you experienced that, you know, the 24 and then, you know, Eurobasket, you were 24 and then down to 14 on the reset. How much, I mean, obviously, you know how much different it is, but what kind of differences in the game does it make going from a 35 second and then down to 24? And do you think that college basketball should go to a 24? I mean, I know they're going down to 30 now, but do you think they should go down to 24?
It would definitely. I think in regards to preparing them for the next level, because at the next level they will be playing with a 24/7 shot clock no matter where they play, I would definitely recommend it. And it just, you know, changes the game. It makes everything faster and quicker. And, you know, I understand that in college, you know, it's a time to develop the players and give them a chance to really understand the game. And I guess maybe, you know, a little bit more time on the shot clock can help. But at the same time, it is a big adjustment than having to play with a 24-second shot clock. So, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to changing it. I think it just prepares the players advance.
That's one of the biggest arguments that I have is basically, you know, everything that college presents itself is not only college sports, but in general, you're preparing young people to become professionals. And everywhere in the world, there's a 24-second shot clock except there. So, you know, that basically would prepare those that segment of individuals for professional life. That's my argument.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there.
You said you love New York City. Obviously, Berlin is, you know, super cosmopolitan and everything like that. How is Bamberg, man? You go down to like 75,000. Not to rip Bamberg at all, not at all. But it's a very beautiful city. Been there a number of times. Yeah. But how are you? I mean, okay, you had where you went down to Wilbraham. Is that how you'd say it? Wilbraham.
Yeah, that's right.
So and that was only 15,000. Okay, Springfield, you know, was not too far, but you know, how much of a culture shock, let's call it. I mean, you're still in Germany, which is your home country, but going to a small city like that after, you know, being Berlin and being in New York City for your whole life basically. How are you dealing with that culture shock?
It's fine, you know, it's definitely something different. I'm used to being in big cities, and I'm a city guy because I'm from Berlin and New York and everything, but it's pretty nice here, as you said. It's a nice town, and I think it has beautiful architecture, and, you know, that definitely is something which helps, you know, because I feel comfortable here, and there's nice restaurants, and it's quiet, but, you know, we have a very busy schedule, and it's nice to be able to relax, you know, when you get home. So I feel pretty comfortable here, and it's very nice. It's a nice town.
Biggest thing you miss about New York City?
Biggest thing I miss about New York City? Ah, man. Just the energy on the streets. Halal. I miss halal. The energy on the streets, you know, it's something very special. There's always something going on. The noise, it's always something which is in your ears, so... that's something I miss because I've gotten accustomed to it, and it's something that I felt comfortable in, as weird as it sounds.
You're an Ivy League educated person, and you know you're somebody who has a world view on things just from traveling the world as well with an artist as a mother. Your father's from an entirely different continent as well, Senegal, Africa. Being in the States for so long, 5 years, and you can answer this if you want to, you can, you know, however you feel like answering it, but you know, Knowing New York City and the diversity of New York City, what are your thoughts on this U.S. American presidential election? I mean, is there, you know, as someone diverse, as a background you have, you know, and you and being in the States, you know, longer, you know, a good amount of time with 5 years, you have a good understanding. You know, what do you think about this election in general? And like I said, if you don't really feel like answering it, you know, that's fine. But you know, just be interested to hear your point of view.
I mean, yeah, it's politics. It's a very shaky topic, you know, a very sensitive topic to some people. So I don't want to step on anyone's toes, really. But I think what I can say is, I don't know, man. It's just I think. The fact that, you know, the Republicans and Democrats, instead of, you know, trying to come together and, you know, look for solutions and really try to, you know, push policies and work together in order to push policies forward, which will help the population. I think, you know, there's more of a battle going on and it's more of an opposing battle where they try to, you know, just fight against each other as opposed to coming together and really make things happen. And I think that's a pity because, at the end of the day, you know, it's the population that really lacks the benefits and really suffers from that because, that's basically my answer. Does that make sense to some extent?
Yeah, yes. I mean, they're going, yeah. They're going further apart than coming together. Exactly.
And that's just, it's just something which, you know, the Republicans, they've been, you know, trying to knock down Democrats and Obama so much, and now they forgot to really focus on themselves and, you know, now Donald Trump is the Republican candidate, and it's kind of crazy, man. You know, it's like it's a crazy thing, you know, because in my eyes and the eyes of many people, I don't know what your political stance is, but you know, he's saying a lot of radical stuff, and many people do not agree with it, and some things are really inappropriate, and it's just crazy to see that, you know, a person is able to just, you know, be able to finance his own campaign and with money just be able to gain so much power, you know, and it's a pretty crazy thing to see, I think.
Yeah, it's gonna be a definitely defining election for sure, one way or the other.
Definitely. I mean, it's gonna be. I mean, either it's gonna be the first, you know, elected female president in United States history. Or it's gonna be, you know, Donald Trump. So it's gonna be pretty crazy. But you know, I just think the main thing is I think people need to come together and just really work in the best interest of people. But you know, politics would be great just generally in life if that was the case everywhere.
Yeah, for sure, same thing here in Germany. You have, you know, with people sort of speaking out against the immigrants that are coming in and stuff like that, you know.
Right. You're right, actually. In Germany, there's right now something's happening.
And you also have Brexit in England and stuff like that. They're also looking to separate themselves.
You're right. There's a bunch of things going on globally right now. That's very true.
Let's come back to hoops. you had the Portsmouth where, you know, some people were pretty impressed with you. You were with the 76ers. Let's just ask it like this. How close do you feel you were to making the NBA team?
I don't know. I mean, as far as I understand, you know, I was able to get an invite to training camp, and you know, that definitely would have been an option for me. But at the same time, I had offers here in Germany, which I think were a better situation for me. You know, so I don't know how close I was. I don't know what would have happened if I would have went to training camp with a team, or you know, if I would have been accepted a partially guaranteed deal. But I'm very happy with the situation I'm in. You know, I signed a deal here in Germany and I play with Bamberg now. They play EuroLeague, you know, which is the best level behind the NBA. And it's a great program. I'm able to improve here. So that's why that's the decision I made. I made a decision which enables me to improve my game. And that's my primary objective here, you know. So I think I'm in a good situation.
Yeah, I mean, you were much sought after. You know, a lot of teams were looking at you. I mean, was the EuroLeague, you know, was that just such a overwhelming factor that you said, okay, I just can't pass this one up? I mean, instead of going to another club or whatever.
Yeah, the EuroLeague, and then just the success the team has had, and the promising opportunities to develop. I think those factors were probably the most exciting for me.
As a point guard, you know, we talked a couple times about pick and roll. Maybe just talk. I mean, okay, you said you've only been in practice now for a couple weeks now, but you know, maybe just talk a little bit about what it's like working every day with guys like Zizis, Giannis, and now Fabian Kasur as well. Just having to go against those guys every day at practice, and all of their experience. You know, what kind of things are you learning from all those guys?
Just that there's a whole lot to learn still. basketball, you can dominate the game of basketball in many different ways. Everyone has their own strengths, and I see with Caesars, especially in Strenix, for example, you know, the way that they understand the game, it really helps them play effectively, and it really forms their quality. And I'm just trying to understand the way they navigate, try to understand the way they move, understand the decisions they make, and just slowly but surely, you know, come there and get to that level as well, because it's a very dangerous weapon, you know, understanding the game of basketball the way they do. And it's very impressive, the decisions they make, the passes they make off of the pick and roll, just small things, you know, just seeing the team fouls and just drawing a slick foul, like things like that, you know. Basketball is very comprehensive, man, and I'm beginning to understand that.
Obviously, club expectations are the German championship, you know, I'd say probably, you know, a quarterfinal, the playoffs is really, really what they want. I mean, if not even more than that. You know, what kind of confidence you guys have? You know, you guys played Fenerbahce, took them down to the wire, you know, in a really tough place to play. You know, all the experience they had last year, there was, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, besides Melli and Zizis, hadn't played EuroLeague yet. And, you know, Wanamaker, Giannis, and stuff like that, they didn't play much EuroLeague. So now those guys all have that year of EuroLeague experience. What kind of expectations do you get? Does the team go into this season have, both EuroLeague and Easy Credit BBL?
I mean, I'm new to the team, so I don't really know the way in which the demeanor of the team has changed from last year to this year. But, you know, I just think the team is very focused, very experienced as well. As you said, since they had a year of EuroLeague already, and I think, you know, everyone's set on the same goal. That's all I can say, you know, it's just what I'm seeing. And everyone is just trying to, you know, go game by game. Everyone realizes it's a long season, so all you can do is focus on the next opponent and, you know, taking a professional approach and try to win every game you can. And that's what I'm seeing right now, you know, a very focused atmosphere and a very focused mentality.
You mentioned long season and a lot of games. I think it's no stretch at all saying that you guys are going to probably play 70 games this year. You had a stretch where you went Wednesday in Göttingen, Friday. Was that in Göttingen or was that at home? No, that was at home, right?
Yeah, that was at home.
Yeah, so Wednesday at home in against Göttingen, Friday at Fenerbahce, and then Sunday way up north in Bremerhaven. Talk a little bit about that, you know, just about the travel. I mean, I guess besides the postseason tournament, the most you guys would play is two games in college. Okay, it's early, but just your thoughts so far about the scheduling.
yeah, I'm starting to understand that it's going to be very busy, and especially now, you know, Istanbul, and then right away Bremerhaven. It's tough to, you know, but you know, I'm pretty used to the Friday Saturday back to back is something I used to do in the Ivy League.
Okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
So to that extent, you know, I'm kind of used to that pretty much, but the traveling is something which, when you have 70 games, which really can get to you, and you know, that's why it's important to have a deep rotation and you know, to have a very cohesive team.
Maybe just your goals for this season on a personal level, what you want to do with and for the team.
Just be successful with the team, and at the same time, continue to learn more about basketball, improve. You know, even if it's just a little bit, just always keep moving forward, and that's it.
All right, Manolo, really appreciate the time, the insight, the information.
Yes.
Good luck. Stay healthy first. That's the main thing. Long season.
Yeah.
Get your rest and do your treatment, and we'll catch you down the road.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Really nice guy. Had a real pleasant conversation with him, and really enjoyed it. And obviously we talked about the election, and that was obviously done. You know, I guess it was probably done almost a month ago, maybe so, somewhere in there. But had been saving it for a little bit because had interviews here and there to run. And so, good kid. And I think, like I said, like before, I think he's, I think he'll be okay. You know, it's really good that he's, he's definitely a big role player for the BBL. I mean, even he's playing, you know, 22, 16, 21 minutes against, Ludwigsburg. Bayern Munich was obviously the blowout, but Gießen, you know, played 21 minutes against Gießen in a game that, Bamberg ended up winning on a buzzer beater by Darius Miller. So it's not that he's just playing against, you know, played 19 minutes against Oldenburg, so it's not that he's just playing against nobodies, and you know, good amount of minutes. Is, you know, he's actually averaging 18 and a half minutes in the BBL, only averaging five and a half minutes in the EuroLeague, but you know, that I see that picking up a little bit over the course of the year. Not loads, but a little bit. You know, it's his rookie year, and he's getting used to everything. Bamberg, tough loss again. you know, they've had every game has been within 4 points, win or loss, and you know, it was another 1 point loss. They lost at home against Panathinaikos, and about a month ago, and today, last night against Zvezda. Lost 78-78. I was impressed with Marko Jurić, the 21-year-old Serbian. Obviously, he was on the team that won the U20 European Championship. Not last summer, but the summer before. And, you know, really impressed with his game. You know, NBA scouts were there yesterday, and, you know, great feel for the game, toughness, maturity, but, you know, just a shade too short, and, a tad less athletic than you'd need to be in the NBA, and one of the scouts I was talking to basically said, yeah, you know, that's Karasev, Sergei Karasev, basically, and so, I mean, it's like, you know, that's exactly what the problem was with Karasev, and that's why he's not in the league anymore, and And yeah, I mean, there's that those are the things that the NBA looks for a reason. And you know, as tough and gritty and knowledgeable and everything else in the game that you know Jurdović seems to have, you know, it's the physical attributes, athletic attributes that the league requires almost. Obviously, there's no requirement. I mean, if you're good enough, you're good enough. But you know, that's just these guys have been, you know, looking at all these players for decades and everything else, and there's a reason why a certain type of player does or doesn't work there and isn't able to establish themselves there. And so I think, you know, definitely played, you know, Jurdović definitely played his way into personal cheese ball status. Actually, not sure if everybody who listens to the show, even on a pretty regular basis, understands what cheeseball status means for me, but if you don't, go back and listen to the shows. Or basically, cheeseball is a favorite, a player I really enjoy watching and following. So he's kind of played his way into, definitely played his way into being a cheeseball status for me, for whatever that means. You know, also lefty, played beautiful. Beautiful bounce pass on the break that led to a Semenich dunk, and you know, drove and dumped and little bounce pass to the big man. Drove into the lane, dump bounce pass to the big man. You know, there's so, and a lefty. You know, you put all that together, and you know, there's plenty of space in my heart for guys like that. So, but again, yeah, the athleticism is not there. Yeah, I wish. But do think he'll be a good EuroLeague player for years to come. NBA, I just don't know if he's there. He's an NBA eligible, which is one of the reasons I was kind of watching him yesterday. All right, well, I guess that's it. Heading down to Bayern Munich today. Actually, they have a doubleheader. They're going to be playing there. They have their B team, their Pro B, a third division team, their second team. Playing at the Audi Dome in the early evening, late afternoon, and then after that they have the Euro Cup game against Zenit St. Petersburg. So I'm gonna check out the kids. I can't remember the last name of the Marvin, the Austrian. And then there's Yalo. There's also Kerim Yalo. There's Amar Gajic. There's Vitamin. So a couple of kids I want to see there. Also Kovacevic. Actually going to check out. Want to see what Karasev's able to do. I guess he didn't play last week didn't make the trip last week to Malaga for whatever reason. I'm going to go check them out tonight. So that is the show for this week. Last thing I need to do to let you know what you're going to be listening to, the song's called Hurricane Bay, and it's by Krastovsky. It's available on freemusicarchive.org, as almost all of the music. So until next week, enjoy the hoops and be well. It seemed impossible.
Hey, it's Johannes Vogtmann from the Fraport Skyliners, and I'm listening to Take the Charge.